Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. Tonight we are talking about staying alive and surviving a natural disaster. What do you need to know? My guests are Tyrone Wells. He is the Operations Division Manager with the Prince George's County Office of Emergency Management. And Chuck Chrysostomo. He is the Director of Operations for the Montgomery County Office of Emergency Management and Homeland Security. We are taking your phone calls if you have any questions. If you're having difficulty getting through, keep trying. I promise I will get to you at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Real quick, Denise was talking about not having a really great rapport with her neighbors. I can't say that I never had a great rapport with my neighbors, Denise, but I will tell you this. When we had the Snowmageddon situation, and this was even before that, it was early in the 2000s, and I had just moved to my community. I didn't know my neighbors until then. And when we were helping each other dig out, pushing cars around, and you know, running to the store if someone had a four-wheel drive, that, as was suggested by my guests, you know, those other kinds of things kind of drop off. You know, they drop off when you're talking about health and making sure that people are safe. So I would agree. You know, it can happen, but certainly, you know, let us hope that your relationship with your neighbors would improve, you know, before disaster strikes. So just something,
right.
Yeah,
thank
certainly
you
something
for that.
To think about.
Yeah.
But thank you so much. Let me go to Rico, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Rico, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. What I wanted to say is many people don't realize that the financial investment in preparing for a disaster really is quite nominal. You could have most items you need for an emergency, a typical emergency, without power, without water, and so forth, for under $100. You know, you could buy 4-pack of brand new flashlights with the batteries, have bottled water, a first aid kit, and many other things, and it really is under $100. And the level of effort to maintain a what we call a go kit or maybe a shelter-in-place kit is really quite minimal. And a quarterly check on your supplies is no different than checking your grocery list. Mm-hmm. I personally have both of my children involved. You know, I have my son and my daughter involved, and they know we have a couple of backpacks with these emergency supplies, and they each have their own individual bag that they could grab at any time. And this comes, you know, I did this, currently do for over 15 years in the Army. So people need to think about that.
I think that is an excellent point, Rico. But the other side of that, Chuck, and we saw this both in southeastern Texas, but we also saw this even in Florida, where at some point, when these disasters get really, really close, cash is king. Credit, you may not be able to use a credit card. ATMs may not work. And so the cash aspect of surviving a natural disaster may be much, much more expensive.
Having an emergency equipment set up.
Well, hold on. Let me have Chuck respond to that real quick. Chuck, go right ahead, please.
Right. I was just going to say, you make an excellent point. In the middle of an emergency with power out, one of the things that I worry about with population is that when they realize that they can't get to a bank or can't get to an ATM to get some cash out, which is what they do on a normal daily basis, panic sets in. So having a supply, just a small amount, and as Rico said, maybe $100 just in reserve in part of your emergency kit as cash would come in extremely handy because during emergencies, that is the currency that will be taken at that point. Credit card machines, all that stuff requires power. And if we are in an extended power outage due to an emergency, cash really is what works. The other thing I wanted to say is we have emergencies that are other than natural disasters. And 9/11 was the king of that perfect example in this Washington, D.C. area. But I'll tell you, that little 5.9 earthquake was the very same thing. If you tried to make a phone call during those emergencies and you tried to call to Fairfax, to D.C., to anywhere local, you were not going to get a line out.
Mm-hmm.
You could not get through. But if you tried to call Ohio or California or Louisiana, you went straight out. So having an emergency list of individuals, relatives, friends, that are out of state, and having them as the point of contact for you and your family members so that you all could call Aunt B in, you know, Minnesota, or, you know, Aunt Nancy in Florida, and all of your children and yourself, call them to be able to say, I'm fine, I'm here. Could you convey that to, you know, my parents or wherever? I could not call the various schools in Montgomery County on 9/11. I just could not get through on a line.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing was true in September or in August 2011 with that 5.9 earthquake. So having a communication plan as a part of how you would be able to contact your family members by creating a point of contact out of state is a really important thing.
Rico, thank you so much for sharing with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about natural disasters. Are you prepared to survive and stay alive? What do you need to know? Tyrone, one of the things that we saw a lot of over the past couple of weeks is that there were people in Texas and in Florida who were, for lack of a better term, willing to stick it out. They weren't going to evacuate. They weren't going to either evacuate out of state. They wanted to stay at their homes. They weren't even willing to go to any local shelters. And at least in some parts of Florida, you know, particularly like the folks in Miami, for example, that were not severely hit. Do you think that those people may have a false sense of security with all of the hype and then nothing happened?
That can be very true. There's a lot of psychology that goes along with planning for disasters and managing through them and how people react and when they will leave, when they don't leave. We try to get people to understand that they have to assume that a disaster can happen. We realize even when we're asking people to leave that there are going to be people that just won't leave for one reason or another. So we factor that in. And at every local level, as we saw in Florida over the weekend, the officials there would tell people at this point, it's a point of no return. We'll no longer be able to provide you with any assistance. We won't come back out until safe to do so. There is always the issue of we ask people to evacuate or take certain actions. We don't get what we expected. No matter how improved weather forecasting has become, there's still that margin of error. So people are going to make those choices. We always hope that they'll err on the side of caution, but it's a reality. We do our best to manage through it as we're planning our disaster preparedness and our disaster response.
You know, Tyrone, one of the things that I think has been observed when you're talking about what happened in Texas and now what has happened in Florida, yes, there and in the Caribbean, there have been deaths. And that is tragic and horrific. And yet, there have been fewer deaths in the Caribbean, in Florida, Georgia, and Texas combined than there were during Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. And can that be attributed to the fact that, for example, in Texas, you had 35 to 40,000 people leave the state, leave Houston? They got out of the way.
There are probably a lot of different factors that go into that. In New Orleans, much of the death was attributed to the levee breaking after people thought that the danger had passed.
Mm-hmm.
In Texas, it was somewhat different, even though you had the controlled releases. So every emergency has, or every disaster has different factors, and it's sometimes difficult to put your thumb on exactly what contributed the most. But we do know in New Orleans that just the nature of the way it unfolded with the levees breaking without anyone knowing. In Texas, when they began to release water, they were able to tell people, we're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
There was some warning. Yes, people became trapped in their homes, but it unfolded much differently than what occurred in New Orleans, which it essentially the breach of the levees was a no-notice event, as opposed to knowing that the hurricane is coming.
There you go. Thank you so much for that.
Harold, the additional thing that happens since Katrina
mm-hmm.
is really significant, and it is social media. The advent of social media has allowed the population to be able to communicate better that they're in trouble, they're in need, and to heighten that awareness. And so that was missing from what we had in Katrina at the time. So while we saw the levees break, we didn't realize what that impact was as soon as we should have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's a big difference as well. So
I would
it's an improvement that I'm glad to see.
Excellent, excellent point, both of you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jason, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Jason. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
My question is concerning in an emergency situation, when you have the storms and everything like you have in Florida and Texas, what happens or what kind of provisions are made for senior citizens or sickly people, elderly, handicapped people who are not able to visit the website? Sometimes the phone service is not always clear, or they don't get a clear connection. So what happens to that? Are there provisions made for these people that cannot, do for themselves, who don't have companions? Because I live in the city, and where I live, there are quite a few senior citizens and handicapped people. And, they don't listen to the radio that much, and they don't go through the Internet. So what kind of provisions are made? What do you do for situations like that?
Well, Chuck, let me let you handle that first, and then Tyrone, I'll let you chime in. Go ahead, Chuck, please.
Well, one of the things, we have a workbook that we use when we go to various presentations that we do, and we do this year-round. We don't just do this in September and preparedness month. And many of the places that we go will be to senior centers,
mm-hmm.
To senior living communities, to special needs communities, and say to them, in the workbook, there's a section, and this workbook's available on our website at Montgomery County. So it's available for anybody that can get to our website and to the emergency management site.
Mm-hmm.
It suggests a few things. And one is to have relatives, if you have them, that you can call immediately. Mm-hmm. To have a friend or a neighbor nearby who might be able to assist you.
Mm-hmm.
Again, getting that information is critical, but we all set up emergency shelters to be able to handle special needs individuals, seniors with mobility issues.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all prepared in the shelters to be able to get to take care of you, but you need to be able to understand that you need to go and then have an ability to get there. We will send emergency personnel to do transports, but that is a limited resource. And with the numbers of seniors in the National Capital Region, it is an overwhelming number. So being able to have as part of your plan an emergency contact individual who might be able to transport you to an evacuation shelter is a critical part of the plan for seniors or those with special mobility issues.
I need to take a break. When we come back, I'll have Tyrone also share his thoughts about that. So, Jason, please stay on the line. Also, we're going to talk to Keith calling from Waldorf. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Staying alive and surviving a natural disaster, what you need to know. We'll be back in just a moment.